Hi, everybody. Before we start today's episode, I just wanted to invite you to join our new In Search of Tarot book club, if you haven't already done so. For the next 3 months, we are making our way through Radical Tarot by Charlie Claire Burgess, and there is a discount code at the link on Instagram at In Search of Tarot. For the month of October, we're making our way from the introduction of the book through to Chapter 9, The Hermit. Next week, we'll be releasing a special episode where Angie and I will be discussing those chapters, and then the following week, on Monday, October 23rd, we'll be hosting our first Patreon-exclusive book club discussion. All tier levels on our In Search of Tarot Patreon will be invited to attend this book club gathering to discuss, debate, and debrief about the themes and concepts that we've read so far. So, if you haven't already done so, I hope you'll support the show and join the book club over at patreon.com/insearchoftarot. Thank you so much to those of you who already make this show happen, and happy reading. Welcome back to In Search of Tarot, a podcast that examines, questions, and reimagines our approach to life and the cards.
Through guest interviews and in-depth discussions, we'll explore and expand the beautiful complexities of spirituality, philosophy, magic, and more.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Angie.
And we're your hosts for this fascinating ride.
Thanks for being here with us.
Our guest today is Saray Jarrell Johnson, a diviner and poet from Piscataway, New Jersey. Find him on TikTok at Saray Jarrell and Instagram at Collective Cartomancy or at collectivecartomancy.com.
Hey, I'm Saray Jarrell Johnson. I am a tarot, Lenormand, and playing card reader from Piscataway, New Jersey. I'm a poet, and I am a poet who works at the intersection of queerness, transness, and disability, blackness. I'm a hoodoo practitioner, and I have run Collective Cartomancy, formerly known as Temperance Queer Tarot, for the past 12 years. I've been reading for the last 22 years. I am a third generation seer on my mother's side, known, right, because there's way more ancestors I have that I never met, so I can't vouch for them. I can only speak to the ones that told me and that I know for sure, which are my mother and my great-grandmother. Who to some extent each raised me in their own way and who shared their gifts with me. And I learned how to read tarot in my community of origin. And I came into the gifts that I share with my community in my community, starting when I was 12 until this moment and hopefully into the future.
That's so amazing. We're going to definitely talk about that lineage piece, but I feel like I'm getting to like break this kind of, first release of this news that you've changed your name on Instagram, because I've been following you for so long under that name, under that moniker. So, and I was telling you before we started recording that I actually looked for you before we started and I was like, where did they go? But the name's just changed. So everybody make sure you look for Collective Cartomancy if you were following Temperance Queer Tarot. But yeah, I mean, I'm so excited you're here because I really love your work and have loved your work for a long time and love everything that you write about and the way that you think about tarot. And I feel very inspired by a lot of the stuff that you, bring forward in the community. So I'm really excited to talk to you today. And I would love to kind of begin by hearing more about what it was like for you growing up with that lineage. A lot of people, the stories people share on the show tend to be kind of, I did this in secret or, that was definitely my experience as well. Like that it was very like taboo, what I was doing with tarot, but to grow up in your situation where it was like very much a part of the family, I just would love to hear like what that was like for you.
That like for me, I think that I don't know that I knew another way. So I will say, I'm from New Jersey. My family has lived in New Jersey before there was an America. So we were in my mother's side of the family, at least one part of it. My mother's father is from South Carolina. My father's father is from Savannah, Georgia. And my father's mother is from Coulomne, North Carolina. But I guess my great grandfather was from there and my grandmother is from Camden, New Jersey. But by way of Pulumi, North Carolina. But as far as my mother's side, I grew up with like my old elders. So my great great grandmother was alive until I was six, and she was, they just stopped counting at 100. So,
Right.
yeah, and I think that that's like there's like something cultural to just stop and counting at 100. It's like, okay, well, you've reached as old as we can imagine, so you're just old at this point. Who knows how old, but old. But I was raised with my great grandmother. My great grandmother took a major hand in raising me. I lived with her and slept in the same bed with her until I was eight. And when I came into, I don't know that I like the idea of like I came into my power, right? Because it was always kind of like there. I just kind of came to maturity when I was 12. And I think that they were just kind of like, this kid's weird. And especially as an autistic person, I was diagnosed when I was a child, when I was very young. So, because I was nonverbal, so, easy to diagnose in that way. I think that, I definitely fell into the indigo child stereotype of 90s autism. It's like, this kid's weird with magical powers. So like, it was like, I feel like the autism was way bigger of a deal, like that was like really the limiting factor of my, and also just like a particular kind of weirdness. I was raised by queers. So my mother is queer. I think that she's back in the closet at this point, but she had a wife when I was a kid until the time I was 12, 13. And different upbringing than other people. But when I started reading cards, it's because my mother took me to the psychic fair that was in, not our town, but the next town over. And there was a psychic fair. And I was there with my mother and my aunt and my cousin. And we were walking around, we got our auras read. That was really cool. I was just like, when you bring a kid to the carnival, I don't know if what the situation with people's upbringing is. I think that carnivals are like, sometimes it's like people are like, that's podunk or whatever, but we love a carnival, love fair. But like, the psychic fair, I was like Templeton. I was like, woo-hoo! Like I was mad young, but I was really excited. And I came to a It's interesting because, like, there were so many tarot publishers there because it was a fucking psychic fair. And, I was still there with my mom and my aunt. And I remember I used to have, because, being a child of gay people in the 90s, if you didn't experience it, you missed it because it was great. It was horrifying. It was wonderful. It was just everything. Like, it was like very, like, that was when being gay was like cool, like, and it was cool to have rainbows, like freedom rings and shit like that, Back when you could be, what the kids call cringe, and nobody would be mean to you because it was like we were all together in a different way than we are now. Obviously, I'm gay still, but like, it was different because, like, I say that to say, I had this little wooden box and it had, like the rainbow was in stars on it, and I had some money in it, and my mom gave me a little more, which is something that she never did because we really didn't have money like that to spare, but she gave it to me, and she went with me to try to, figure out what I wanted, and I saw, the publishers must have been packing up at this point because they only had two decks of cards left. And one was Tarot of a Moon Garden, and the other one was like this like Art Nouveau Lovers, like Tarot of the Lovers, I think it was called. I'm sure
I
it's
think I have that. I think I have that deck. Is it like kind of big and oversized?
like
That's
a
like,
little big, but it's like
yeah.
very romantic, like
Yes.
very dramatique. And I looked at the Tarot of a Moon Garden. I saw some fairies, I saw some dragons, I was with the shits, and the rest is history. And that's the truth. I mean, I never stopped reading cards. Everyone in my family knew I read cards. My friends at school would gift me tarot cards for, for like holidays and stuff like that. Everyone knew. I started reading, interpreting dreams at the same time. I remember at that same fair, I had bought some like dream stuff and like a dream bomb. And I do the same thing now. Like it's like more than having a service, it's just like it's who I am. It's just like it is who I am. And when I started reading, I didn't even expect my family to reject me. Like it was just like so obvious that it was their fault I was like this. And I talked to my great grandmother, and before that, it was clear that I was searching, which is probably why they took me, because I was like reading books about Wicca and I was like, this is not what I am, right? I like didn't really understand because like the tradition that we do practice in, it's like a little more private or secret, especially at the time. Like it wasn't like today. And my great grandmother, they would let me practice like my astrology stuff on them, and they was church saints, right? So like they were in church. My great grandmother's a mother of church. My grandmother was a church nurse. My mother was a trustee at the gay church. So, like, they're church folks. And I remember talking to my great grandmother, I'm reading tarot and stuff like that. And she's like, I can see angels and spirits just like that. I can see angels. I can see ghosts. I can see spirits. Here are the spirits that I saw. Here's when I saw them. Here's how I came to see them. And mind you, my grandmother, she was a domestic. And when she was done being a domestic, because she's told to be a domestic, she ran a daycare out of our house, right? So she always, especially like I always knew her as a business owner. And she also had a seamstress, like she took in seamstress work as well before I was born. And she was also a good painter. And so I knew those things about her life. And I grew up sharing a bed with her. We slept in a twin bed. My mom slept in a twin bed across the bedroom. So, I knew her extremely well. We were very, very close. And when she said that, it just like made sense. She was just like, yeah, I see angels and I see spirits. And here are the angels and spirits I saw. I saw this ghost when I was this old, and here is the conditions under which I saw them, and these things. Like she never, it was just never a problem.
Yeah, I'm curious, like how learning tarot was for you, like as you were picking up these cards and coming into your gifts, like did you study, did you read, like what sources did you go to, or was it all just kind of your own, gnosis and your own intuition, or how did you kind of come to understand how to work with tarot?
That's a good question. I think that the gift precedes the knowledge. Like the gift precedes the knowledge, the spirits precede the knowledge, your ancestors precede the like knowledge of it. So, at the beginning, and then this is before, like I'm sure there was tarot on the internet, but I didn't have regular access to the internet, so I wasn't accessing tarot on the internet. I was reading, I was looking at the book that came with my cards. I was 12, so like I only had so much freedom to do whatever. I was looking at the astrological associations. That was a big thing for me because I was interested in astrology before I got interested in tarot. But I think that really the way that I learned was reading my friends and family. Like that's really how I learned how to read tarot. And by college, everybody knew I like as soon as I got to college, like people were like, hey, let me get a reading. I remember the like a Renaissance fair nerd, because I went to Hampshire. So like it's like, when you said you're from Asheville, I was like, oh, one of the feeder spaces for the college that I went to. So I went to Hampshire. And like a Renaissance fair nerd who is now passed, may he rest in peace, and I think Heathen as well. Honestly, my more symbolic thoughts, like my deep tarot thoughts, which I think are the way that often people sometimes think about me, like that's not how I think of myself. Like I really don't think of myself as being like I'm a tarot scholar. Like I'm not a card reader. So, I learned the cards in the way that I in the way I feel like I talk about them, which is through experiences, like understand the archetypes through because I have a relationship to power, right? I understand the archetypes because I have a relationship to living the ups and downs of life. And I believe that the archetypes can be understood without books, for sure. And I think that to some extent they can be understood without memorization. Although, like, I guess we exceptionalize memorization, I feel, like where it's like, oh, like you gotta remember this verbatim word for word. When I don't think that's what memorization is. I think that when you commit something to memory, it always changes. You never have what's on the page. It always creates a third thing. So with poetry, with archetype, does matter, right? Because memorization is it's always personal, right? Like even the way I memorize and recite a poem, the way you memorize and recite a poem, somebody else, it's going to be a million different ways, right? It's just like, because that's what memory does. It brings something different to the front for me than it does for you. So when I say memorization, I don't mean like, pull out Rachel Pollack's 78 degrees of wisdom and, and memorize the whole thing. That's not what I mean. But like, understanding where the archetypes you're talking about come up, where they come from, how they manifest and like remembering times you saw them before and how that worked out, right? That's what I mean when I say memorization. It's not about memorizing what works for somebody else. It's memorizing what works for you. And like memory is deeply personal. Not everyone's memory works the same way. But I do think that like a process of internalizing the cards is necessary. But I don't necessarily think that for everyone, especially if you're a minoritized person, that like a word for word memorization of what someone else says about it is even going to be relevant to your shit. Like, that could actually fuck your shit up.
Yeah, I love that. It's more like a relational sort of definition of memorization. You know, like I really like that a lot. And I actually am reading a book right now that's talking about just, you know, that researchers are learning that memory, how faulty our memory is, you know, and how we do like create new memories in the past, and that actually our ability to imagine the future is much stronger than our sense of like what happened before, you know, and that really that's what we're doing when we remember something, is we're kind of building a future because we're like re-emphasizing certain aspects that we kind of remember, but also like mixing that with other things that we've heard or other people's memories. You know, there actually, I don't know if you ever watched this show Succession, but there's a line in one of the characters that I just like gasped when he said it, and he was like, I something about like the past is made up, only the future is real or something, you know, and I was like, yes, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and also like I believe in letting things change you, you know, especially like archetypes, like ex encounters with archetypes change you. And I think that that's what I mean when I say memorization, you know, like allow your understanding of these archetypes to change you, allow yourself to see them in the world and allow that to change your mind about things. But I don't mean like get the guidebook and like just have it, love it, be it. Like that's not my shit at all.
On your website, you talk about doing your readings at your kitchen table and why that is. Will you kind of talk a little bit about that? I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I mean it's a service, you know? Like it's a service that I provide. And I provide it very gladly, right? So like there's like that level of like privacy, there is that level of solidarity too, 'cause people come to you in hard situations. Like I feel like it's so interesting 'cause there's this like conversation where it's like, you know, blank 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 spiritual provider isn't a therapist, isn't a doctor. It's like, yeah, thank God. Yeah, thank fucking God. Like, I don't have to put nobody in grippy sock jail because of what they come and tell me at my kitchen table. I don't have to do that. I don't have to be part of medical industrial complex in the way that a doctor or a therapist has to be. So thank God, you know, that I'm not those things and let those people do their job, right? I got two therapists. I say it all the time because people will think that just because I'm saying this that I'm anti that. I'm not. I just came from the doctor, right? So we need all of it. And that's part of the reason I love collaborating with like therapists and stuff like that, because it's just like everything. We need everything. But we also need people who read cards at their kitchen table. Yeah.
I got asked a question recently that I thought would be fun to ask you, and because it just really delighted me when it was posed to me, and I'm curious how you'll respond. So it was actually the guest from last week's episode, Thomas, asked, how would you explain what tarot is to someone who's never heard of it before? So I'm wondering how you would do that.
A book of archetypes that are the foundations of capitalism.
Okay, say more about that.
Sure. So tarot, from triumphi, right, to tarocchi, comes from the colonizer class of, 14th, 15th century Italy, who made a game about power in Italy and how it flowed and played it with each other. We found it that, you know, they find it in castles and shit like that, right? But in many ways, right, it is an astute observation of the haves and have-nots, and the archetypes that make it so. And it is a book because that's what books are, right? They are pages that give you information about things. So tarot, I'm certain, is a book. You know, like tarot combines drawing lots with bibliomancy. Yeah. And the archetypes on there for the times, I mean, I don't think the tarot will be relevant after capitalism. I don't. Not in its full form, right? Some of the archetypes will still exist, but I don't think tarot will be relevant once capitalism falls.
Wow, that's really provocative. So you don't think that there's a way that it could evolve to be beyond it? Like, you think capitalism is just that inherent to tarot that it can't exist without it?
Unless I mean, capitalism and imperialism, yeah. I mean, what will a king or queen mean after capitalism, imperialism fall?
Well,
How
that's what,
will an
yeah.
emperor be?
So it's because of those titles and images that you like, what if it became something that wasn't those things?
Then we would still, then it wouldn't have had fallen, you know, like it won't have fallen if we still have those concentrations of power in some other way. Like it's not about what we call it, like an emperor, an empress, it talks about a real concentration of power. A king, a queen, a vassal fucking state, like that's a real fucking shit. And also, like the queen just died, like a king was recently made. This is what's going on in our world. That's why tarot is relevant. That's why tarot is relevant because like there is a king, there is a queen. I'm sure there's an emperor. You know what I mean? Like, and also like the queen is an empress. You know what I mean? Like, or was the empress fucking dead? But yeah, you know, like she's an empress. Like she had holdings around the fucking world that she stole. You know, like she created abundance from the earth that she stole from the earth. Right? Like without capitalism or imperialism. I mean, first of all, tarot announces itself as being about imperialism, right? Like the Empress is like the first real Trump. Do you know what I mean? Like she's the first real triumph is that like we will have power and it will still be a maternal power, but okay, it will be in the state. It won't be in the high priestess, it'll be in the state. And how will we capture that power? Well, we'll have an emperor, right? So like we'll take nature and we'll make it an industry, and we'll take that industry. And we'll codify it in the church and in academies and in academic institutions. So no, I don't think the tarot will be relevant after capitalism at all. I think we'll have other divining. Like I'm not saying that divination won't happen. Divination will still happen. But no, tarot won't be relevant after capitalism fall, I don't think.
So when you're working with the cards, this is how you're always, this is the lens through which you're always looking at the cards. This is always part of the way that you're interpreting the cards. Is that correct? And I'm wondering, I'm guessing that maybe it wasn't always that way, or maybe it was, since you were 12, but I'm kind of wondering like how you came to see that, and if I'm correct in saying that that is kind of always innately like what's coming up when you're reading for people, that you're using the cards kind of to examine these topics and look at these issues.
Makes it sound more political than it is, right? So like I think that people who, you know, if look at my work, right, and read the stuff that I make, I think that one thing that comes out is that like I think that divination or fortune telling, of which I do both, has to sit alongside reality. And the reality for the people that I often read for, queer and trans people, Black people, disabled people, multiply marginalized folks, is that like these concepts aren't abstract, right? Like power, an emperor could be a doctor who doesn't want to approve your disability. You know what I mean? The empress could be, you know, like a rich artist who is just like sucking all the money out of the art scene because they're so popular with those who have power and they're getting all the grant funding, right? All of these things have real consequences for people. And so yeah, it's political. Like I have a, you know, a politic around the way that I read, but like when I'm sitting in front of somebody, what we're trying to do is survive. We're trying to say, so it can't just be, oh, and this is, you know, capitalism or whatever. Like it can't just be that. We know that we live under capitalism. And having an analysis of that, I feel like makes me a safe and ethical reader. But like, no, when we sit down together, we're trying to make sure you can get what you need. You know, I'm an erstwhile librarian by trade, Drexel, MSLIS, and I think a lot about information. And I also, you know, I do social media and communications work for, you know, nonprofits that work in health justice, disability justice. One of the ways that pages are ranked online is that like there's more scrutiny placed on pages that either talk about your money or your life, right? And when you come to tarot, you're talking about both. You're talking about your money and your life, you know, like you're talking about like your livelihood. Something could really fuck your shit up. So it's really important that people know like what are your values? What are your ethics, right? Like whose side are you on? Because it will change the predictions that people make. What side they're on.
And then you also have written a lot about accountability, which is something that's really bothered me for a while and actually like stopped me from reading completely for a little bit. Like just the way that in tarot, you're often just a solo practitioner, reading for people, and there's no like oversight. And I mean, I not that I like love the even the word oversight or, the concept, but like, just it seems like there needs to be some sense of accountability. And also just for me, because of my own limited ability to, see things and to and my own in, innate bias, like where is my accountability and how am I creating accountability for myself and where does that show up in the tarot community at large? So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I operate in a religious tradition. I'm a hoodoo practitioner, so like I'm accountable to other hoodoo practitioners to whatever extent that is the case. Not everyone, not all at once. I have my own elders, obviously, as I've said, to whom I am mostly accountable. I have my ancestors to whom I'm very accountable. I try to make sure that that accountability never means I don't tell the truth, and that like I'm limited as a human being. But like, it isn't just me I think about when I talk, and I know that, I can be provocative and controversial, and so some people may be surprised to hear that. But like, actually, if I'm saying it, I really have thought about it, because at the end of the day, I'm very sensitive, right? I don't like a lot of the, I don't want to get a lot of backlash, so I really do. I am very careful with what I say. That doesn't mean everyone's always going to like it or agree. But like, I do care about what the people think. You're never going to catch me be like, I don't care what anybody says. I do. I really do. And it's part of being accountable too, right? There has to be like someone who you care what they think. Really be accountable. So, yeah, I think that, yeah, I feel like it's different for me just because I work in a tradition, in a blood-based closed tradition. So, there are different expectations for someone who calls themselves a reader, or someone who offers this kind of service to the public than there may be in other traditions, particularly people who, are working in tarot as a new age modality, which is something that I talk about in the blog this week, right? Is that like, and that's a thing, right? Because the new age modalities, especially new way, age ways of reading tarot, people don't even predict. You know what I mean? Like they don't want to predict the future. And I'm like, whoa, like that's not even how the folks get down. Where in my part of the world, that's not, like not everyone predicts, right? And I mean, it should also contain inspiration, right? You're not trying to like bum somebody out, or hurt them or break them down, but like, we predict over here, or seek to, if something can be predicted. Not everything can be predicted, and things can be changed, which is one of the things that's beautiful about tarot, right? Is that it like sees people at points of decision, points of change. But I think that, one of the reason I changed my name from Temperament Square Tarot to Collective Cartomancy is because I don't just read tarot. Even in my sessions where I read tarot, I often don't just read tarot, right? So I read tarot with Lenormand and playing cards. And the thing about tarot is like, it's like, yes, you can change. You can make different choices. You can change. But Letterman and playing cards are like, change is hard. So like, yeah, you can change, but will you change? Probably not. That's the fact of it. That's really the fact of life, is that like, it's hard to fucking change. I'm going through something right now, not like bad, something actually very, very good, where I'm recognizing it's like, actually changing to get what I want is harder than just not having it. You know what I mean? Like, it's actually, and that's the truth about change in a lot of cases, not every case, but like, even thinking about something like, recovery. I've been in eating disorder recovery for years and years. It's like, not, you don't just change once and change your fucking life. You have to keep fucking changing. So, like, tarot's points of decision, it like assumes that people live in a world where they're so empowered that they have constant points of change. And with some things like your love life, that's true. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to be with somebody who's bad for you. Okay, well, you're gonna change, but you have to keep changing and make sure you don't pick somebody who's like that again. But like, with a lot of shit in my life, because I am multiply marginalized, some of this shit I can't change. And some of it I don't have the time to change before it happens. So that's where prediction comes in.
Will you speak a little bit more about that? That last bit is, I'm interested in that.
Yeah, so like tarot is the best within 3 months, right? Like in my opinion, in my understanding, in my experience. So like the predictions of tarot, like within 3 months, you can predict most things of tarot. Like you can predict many things, unless the person is like, nope, I've gotten this reading, I'm gonna change, I'm gonna do it today. You might be able to affect change very quickly if you do that. Hard to do that though, because you're gonna get home, you're gonna have to cook, you're gonna have to go back to work, you might have kids, gotta take care of your kids. You have other projects that you started before you got the reading, right? So within 3 months, like if something's coming down the pipe 3 months, you have to really try to change that. Now, beyond that, you could change that, right? Like you have the time to change things that are 3 months in the future, but like you've already made your next 3 months, I believe. Like I made that 2 months ago. I decided what next month is going to look like with my actions. So that's where prediction comes in, right? So when we predict, we do so to, you know, I think that we do so to prepare people, right, for what they can't change. Tarot gives us opportunities to change what we can. Playing cards, of which Lenormand cards are playing cards. They're truncated playing cards. They prepare us for what we can't change.
Mm.
And for what's most likely to happen, and for the things that our personality is going to just repeat upon us.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, look, and I'm not saying that, like, oh, prediction is so great and it helps us so much. Sometimes the shit's a fucking asshole, right? So, like, I wanted to start Tarot and Community in April. I wanted to launch it in April. And whenever I pull on it, my ancestors were like, after your surgery. And I was like, what fucking surgery? What are you talking about? What surgery? What surgery? I'm not, like, no one is calling me back. I don't have an appointment with the doctor. I can't even get a letter from the therapist. Well, in May, I got approved for top surgery and I'm running. I had to run. I had to fundraise. I had to do all this shit because it was going to happen after surgery. Mm-hmm. And here I am after surgery launching it.
Right.
And you know, that prediction, it made me so angry because I'm like, what the fuck do you mean I'm going to get surgery? I've been waiting for this surgery for so fucking long. It hasn't happened. I don't see anything moving, right? I don't see anything moving.
No,
and that's what prediction is for, right? Things I better to know it, because if I had started it then, I would have been sitting looking horny and looking a mess and not being able to fulfill my promises. So that's the value of prediction.
I want to read a quote of yours and have you kind of expand on it a little bit. This is from your blog, and anyone that's not familiar, like, please go check it out. Every post is incredible and dense and just so fantastic. But you write here, quote, "It becomes harder and harder to understand what people's ethics are." So this is going back to kind of what we were discussing earlier. "One of the reasons that this happens is because people want to be in spaces that affirm them. This makes sense. It's essential to affirm members of our communities for existing. It's essential that we believe in their inherent worth and goodness. And also, we need better systems to stop creating oppressive and harmful spiritual spaces. I'm frequently surprised with how often misogynist, racist, queer, and trans antagonistic, etc., spiritualists seem to mingle with those who say that they aren't." So I would love to just let you kind of expand on that a little bit, and any, if there's any personal experiences that you want to speak to, or just any way that you want to kind of expand on that, because I think this is, you know, a really important thing to talk about.
Well, first, again, I will say I'm autistic. So I have a very low social need. And I think that that is a blessing and a curse, right? Because then it's like, well, sorry, you don't go nowhere. Why don't you go nowhere? But also it means that, like, I can be really selective about where I do go, you know, mm-hmm. and who I am around. And sometimes I'll see a post from a spiritualist that's just fucking misogynist or just like anti-gay. And it seems like people must know. But, and not even just post, like, I'll hear somebody say it. And also, like, TikTok, that's really the place. Because TikTok, you know, people are saying it. Their faces are there. I am back on TikTok now under my name, Saray Jarrell. And it just, it baffles me because I think that's the thing. When I say, like, I'd rather have a safe reader than, like, a very powerful reader. Like, obviously, I'd rather have both. But, like, if I'm picking between the two, I'm picking the one that's not going to leave me feeling bad, you know, like that's not going to make my life worse. And I think that that's part of ethics, right? Like what it's like, okay, well, what do you want your clients to have good lives? You know, like, do you want them to be empowered? Do you want them to have power? Do you want them to be able to make decisions that free them and help them and, you know, aid in the process of liberation? Or do you just want to read some cards?
Yeah. How do you continue to practice, you know, these different techniques and systems and lineages that are, you know, quite old and have, you know, and acknowledging like the wisdom of those who've come before and not just kind of bulldozing over, you know, elders, but also like remaining critical and questioning. This is kind of like a theme that's emerged this season on the podcast, because it's something that I'm personally experiencing, is like, the way that sometimes the act of questioning something gets framed as being disrespectful. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering like how you feel about that and how you remain critical of your practices, even while also being respectful of them, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I work in an ancestral tradition. So like there's so much nuance and complications to the tradition in which I practice. That like it's impossible to like see the actions of a couple of people as actions of an entire practice. So like my, you know, I believe that the role of religion or spirituality in my life, in addition to serving God, because I do believe in God, is to bring peace, right? Not just to me, like not to bring me like personal inner peace, but like to bring peace to my community, to bring peace to the land, to bring peace to the water and the animals. Like that's to put myself in right relationship and in right alignment. So let me say that first, because I am religious. That is true. And it's something that, you know, anyone who's ever had a reading with me knows that before I tell them about myself before we start the reading. I tell them about the reading. I tell them about my modalities. It doesn't take that long because I say it all the time. You know, I am religious. So, and tarot and play, you know, playing card reading and Lenormand, they are part of my larger religious tradition. That said, not every old person is an elder. I don't know where people got this idea that just because you're fucking old, that you're an elder. An elder is a position that you serve in a community. An elder is in relationship. An elder wants the best for the youth. Now, they may not always agree with what that is, but not every old person is an elder. And I think that, you know, the idea that like we should never correct people just because they're fucking old, I don't think that that's what eldership is about. Personally, and also my elder is not necessarily your elder, and your elder is not necessarily my elder, you know? So I feel like we talk about eldership. Now I'm not an elder, so maybe I'll feel differently and I'll, you know, I'll get old and I'll be like, every old person is an elder. I don't know. But from right now, and I think that this is such a, you know, it's something that comes up in the 30s, is what I think, you know, because like when I was 20 something reading cards, I wasn't thinking about this. I wasn't thinking about this. I wasn't thinking about my elders, because I feel like it really is the closer you get to elderhood, the more questions start coming up about elders, you know? But like every single person is not an elder, and not because an elder is elderhood, eldership is a responsibility. And it's a responsibility to specific people, right? Some people are movement elders, right? Some people are elders in a tradition. And that's an irrefutable fact. So like some old people are definitely elders, right? Like, and that they are both. And you know, and I can't say what is what in every community because it differs both from the religious tradition, race. Even thinking about, I mean, we're both gay, yeah, we're queer, whatever, yeah. You know, when I think about like queer elders, things like that, like I'm sure you have elders that I just don't have, and I have elders that you probably don't have. But then there are also like the canon of like gay elders, gay ancestors, of which we both probably pull from, you know, like it would be a travesty to find a gay person who didn't think of Essex Temple as an ancestor, right? Like that would be preposterous, right? You know, or you know, and on and on. I feel like I could sit and name so many, right? Elders and ancestors, specific to gayness, right? And I think that that's wonderful and beautiful. But I think that especially for folks who are elders, I think we really have to think about like what the fuck is an elder? Like really what makes you an elder? Because it can't just be like you're old and you survived. Because the best ones don't always survive. And I think especially folks who are our age, we know, I hope we know, like it's like a lot of the best gay people is dead as fuck, and they died in the last plague, and even more died in, or in the last plague for sure, but like in this plague too. So, you know, the good ones don't always survive, and you're left with people who you got to really evaluate whether or not they are elders or if they are just old.
Yeah, honestly, that framing of an elder as someone that wants the best for the youth is honestly so important and so helpful. Like, and I've never thought of it that way, but like, I think that really explains why I feel a lot of resistance sometimes when, like it's just like a teaching, like an astrological teaching or a tarot teaching that if I question it, I'm like being disrespectful. But I think like what you're saying kind of helps me understand like why I feel tension there, because the energy behind that person yet kind of deciding that this is how things should be done was not necessarily with the energy of like I want the best for everybody, like or like, because I think that the if some that an elder or a teacher that would want the best would be a lot more expansive or a lot more, would leave room for the youth to ask questions, and would understand that that's how wisdom is gleaned is through the act of questioning,
And
like,
rebellion.
yeah. So that's so helpful. Like, so I really thank you for that.
Yeah, well, I think that it's also just that, like, And I'm just going to say, because one must say things in order to speak. Our generation of gays, I think that we're hungry for eldership.
Yeah.
So many of our elders were dead. And I think I'm in my mid-30s. I'm assuming that you're,
I
around.
just turned 38. Yep.
Okay, yeah. So, we're in our 30s. We're in the deep work of the 30s. And, our generation specifically, like people of your and my age. When I was a kid, my mother would go to the gay and lesbian center while the quilt was still being sewn in New Jersey. Like that was, and would do like God's Love We Deliver. So my childhood was very much, I was a child among that. I remember when Queer as Folk came on the air. I remember when the L Word came on the air, right? Like I remember when I was an adult when gay marriage was legalized, So our generation, I think we're very hungry for elders, and I think that a lot of us get exploited in that process. Because there's a belief that, like, oh, it's just like whoever is old, because there's so few old people who are gay in the way that some of us are gay. And I mean, like, gay in a way that people don't like. You know what I mean? Not like gay in a way you can hide, but like, why are you being so gay? You know what I mean? Like, why are you here? Why are you this way? I don't want you here. You're gay. Like, and I think that is important to say, just because like time goes on, and as gay acceptance goes on, like you don't necessarily know when somebody is gay, and that's great. There's nothing wrong with that, right? Like there's nothing wrong with keeping your tea to yourself to like for like whatever you want to do. Live your life, you love it. You know what I mean? Like I have no criticism for the way that anybody else is gay, but like when I walk into a room, people are upset that I'm there. Both as a trans, especially as a trans bag, people hate it. Oh my God, they can't take me. So I really have to be in a position to say, that's not my elder, right? Because eldership is a relationship. Mentorship is a relationship. Studenthood is a relationship, right? These aren't just things we can take for granted, that every old person is our elder. Every person who takes the time to talk to us is our mentor. These are relationships that we have with people or don't have with them.
It's also listening to you speak about that. It's also the fact that, like, we didn't always, or it's pretty recent that we have this identity or category to like say that we are, like it was like turn of the century when like gay was even a thing, like, and so in the past, like it actually was more, I guess, secretive, but like, but in a different way. I mean, it just, there wasn't like this neat, and along with that category comes the politicization of it, which I think is then causes us to feel that we should say it, or that, or people get mad if you don't, because like you have to fight for this, or like it's like very complicated, and all of that is actually pretty darn recent that like all of that's come into play,
Right. And even more than that, I think that the generation right under us, or not even the generation, just like a couple of years, they, instead of this like hunger for eldership, they have this nostalgia, right? And nostalgia is always fake. And I think that that comes back to what you said, right? Like the past is made up and the future is what is like, yeah. And like they are making up a past because, again, I was a child in Black lesbian community. And when I say that, like, plenty of people were not accepted, like, I won't even get into it, but like plenty of people were not accepted. Like we was not one big happy family at any point. Like there were all the problems we have now, we have always had. Always had them. And I don't know if they're getting better or worse. I just know that they are what they are, right? And so like there is that need to romanticize an elder. There's a need to romanticize the past. And I think that to some extent we forget that, like, especially when we talk about gayness, that like an archetype too, right? Like I think that one of the reasons why I resonate with the idea, I mean, of course, all of the cards are queer, like there's no real way around that. And there are some cards that are historically more queer than others, right? The Magician, and we have the High Priestess, like they are historically explicitly associated with gays and lesbians. We have the Fool, of course, associated historically with androgynous people. I'm not even gonna say transgender people, but androgynous people. So there are those traditional meanings, but like part of the reason why I can't even like cleanly say like, oh, well, this card, that's a gay card, is because like gay is such a recent idea, like the idea that a gay person is not also like that it, like a gay person is meaningfully different than a trans person, like is a new invention. Like that is not, that is recent, that is the recent thing. Like this intense separation of like queerness and transness from one another, that's pretty recent, just historically in the United States. And so to like tease that apart is to like modernize tarot in a way that I'm not sure that I even necessarily want to do. Because I think that it's one of the things that's always important to me about tarot is that it's old, but it's not ancient. Tarot's not ancient.
Right, right. I like that we've talked a lot about, and your work in general talks a lot about like action along with tarot, because I think sometimes for me, at least when I read for people, I always say that. And at the end of the reading, I always say, okay, now, you know, we've talked about all these things, but now you have to actually like do something with that, you know, which I think is the hard part of tarot and the part that people don't always, you know, follow through with or do. And I'm wondering, this is kind of a big question, but I'm wondering like what your greatest aspiration for what tarot can do and or for what people can do with tarot is.
I hope that people use tarot to understand power. Fascism is rising, and spirituality is part of it. And I think that without spiritualists, spiritual practitioners, tarot readers, religious people, witches, whatever, being willing to use their spirituality to combat fascism, fascist spirituality will win. And that is terrifying to me. It's terrifying. That's the reason I do my work. So, I hope people use tarot to understand and survive fashion.
Before I ask you my last question, I was wondering if you might share a poem with us, a poem that either has to do with tarot or makes you think of tarot or how you relate to tarot or anything like that.
Sure. And this one is The Lovers and the Devil, and it's called Doppelganger. Queer utopians think human beings are perfectible, but we are not. We're just correctable. In an hourly motel, I ask you how many tattoos you have, although I count 14 every time you doze and add your spit to the mysterious stains on the pillows. But the ink proliferates in twilight, sticky gold. Is a cover-up one or two or three tattoos? And how many about your forced disappearances? And how many about the appearance of manhood? And how many about being a man with his face buried in pillows, a short black man hydroplaning down are impossible? I hate how much I love when you suck my toes, and I despise you for making me beg. That's why I can't know you. That's why I stay perpetually ahead of your judgment. You look just like me when I'm fucking you from behind. I'll suck that shrimp cock till the glove pop plus one extra watt before I figure it out. I don't know God anymore, but let's stay here on our knees and wait for him to come.
Thank you. Those are both from your book.
Yeah, they're both from my first book, Slingshot. My second book, Watch Night, will be out from Night Boat Books in February 2024, and it has already won the James Laughlin Poetry Prize from Academy of American Poets.
Oh my God, congratulations.
Thank you.
Is Slingshot for sale currently?
Anywhere books are sold.
Okay, amazing, amazing.
Winner of the 2020 Lambda Literary Award in Gay Poetry.
Yes. Yeah, fantastic. All right. So I'm gonna ask our final question that we like to close with, which is, what are you in search of right now in your life, Saray?
Freedom. Freedom. It's such a beautiful idea. And I think that it's just one whose time has come. And I think, and not like empowerment or like buying power, but like real freedom where people can just relax and chill and there's enough food and there's the water is clean and the air is clean and the land can grow things and, you know, like indigenous people can return to their homelands and we can figure it out. Like, I want that so bad. Like, I said in a reel yesterday that, like, I'm an Alanis Morissette wine mom, and that's so true, you know? But I think some of it, too, about that is really just like, it's making us all so sad. Like, even people who have a fair amount of power, like, it's like, even when I look at, like, even though, like, I'm not studying them on day to day, but, like, it really strikes me that, like, even white women don't get treated good. You know, like they're just like that far from power, real power. They're getting treated pretty bad. And like they're extremely implicated in certain ways, and like especially in like anti-blackness from enslavement on, right? Like extremely implicated. But like just like nobody is having a free time. And like, I am multiply marginalized for sure, but like, there are people having much less free times than me. And I am having a non-free time. It is restrictive. I need liberation. And I can't imagine what it's like to be even more oppressed than I am. And, but I can see that even people who are like objectively less oppressed are having a shitty time. They're having a shitty time. And I think more than anything, I am in search of liberation and freedom. And I mean it. I'm not saying that I like have the answers, but yeah, that's what, all I really want. Okay. That's what I want.
Yeah, it's like it's a sour, the word sour like came to me as you were talking about how it feels. Like it's that no one is happy, you know, that no one is free. Like it feels kind of sour, you know.
And like also like depleting, you know, like it's just like, you know, in Lenormand, there's this card is called mice, or you know, mouse, mice. And it's just about things that like over time just like kill you. They just like slowly kill you. They're like poison. And this system that we live in, it's poison. It's poison for everyone. Because like even thinking about people like Elon Musk, who absolutely is free, you know what I mean? Like he's the one who gets freedom, right? Because he's a fucking apartheid billionaire. So you know his freedom had was caught and costs other people their freedom, you know. It's like it's so poisonous, the system that we live under, that he understands that the planet is completely poisoned and is ready to colonize Mars. Like it is so poisonous, the system we live under, because it's not even happy to poison one planet. It says, I gotta poison another. That's what it takes for me to continue to be free at everyone else's expense. I gotta poison something else. So what I really want is just it's liberation. I mean, we can't live without it. We have to have it. And if it can't, I believe it can come in my lifetime. I'm not someone who says it won't come in my lifetime. I believe that it can. I don't know that it will, but I think that intuition is a really important part of the way that we get free. I really do. And I don't mean like being a tarot reader, right? I mean our intuitions, the ways that we know beyond the knowing. I believe that they are important. I believe that they are essential to movement work. I believe that they're essential to survivors. I believe that they're essential to surviving. I believe that intuition can turn the tide. I do, because it's done it before. And so, it's liberation.
Yeah, thank you. So tell people how they can find you and follow you and work with you. I know that your recent offering is now closed, but I think you just said that you have something opening up in February, so if you want to mention that again, but just anything you want to share with how people can discover you and your work.
Absolutely. So the easiest way to keep up my work is to follow me on TikTok at Saray Jarrell, Cyree. I'm gonna say it again. Cyree Jarrelle. That's on TikTok, or Collective Cartomancy on Instagram. You can hit me up at www.collectivecartomancy.com. You can take my Liberation Tarot Starter Kit, which is a course. An email course, a 5-day email course. I won't say that my offer tarot community is closed. It's that the announcement is done, that round of enrollment, but there will still be pathways for people to get in it, whether they're taking my classes. That includes email courses you may be offered. It might not, because I have a sense, I have like a little bit of Willy Wonka in me, you know what I mean? I have that Willy Wonka where like I just like a little surprise, you know, like being quite myself. Like sometimes I like a little whimsy, a little pop out, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, but keep in touch. If follow me on Instagram, it's a good time. I think that I create with a lot of integrity and yeah, I love what I do. I love what
You walk the talk for sure, for
I
sure.
do.
And
I
I,
try my best. You can't
you,
always do it. Nobody can, but
no,
I
yeah.
try my little best. I do.
Yeah, no, you're really fantastic. And I'm so happy to I got to talk to you, and I really thank you for spending this time with me.
Thanks for having me on, Nick.
In Search of Tarot is independently written, recorded, edited, and transcribed by Nick Kepley and Angie Miller. You can follow Angie on Instagram at birdgirl underscore, that's BIRDGERHL underscore. And you can follow me, Nick, on Instagram at In Search of Tarot. Have a question or a comment? email us at isotpod@gmail.com. We also invite you to leave us a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.